Thanks. I wanted to tell you something about my past research that was carried out this year in Turku. And it was actually one of those funny moments that made me think about what I did before. Because when I was a little bit younger, I attended a lecture on functional analysis in while doing the master's study. And this lecture was somehow like famous for the fact that nobody signed up ever. Because there are 13 weeks in an academic semester in Bratislava, and this lecture, it was meant to be like 120-ish minutes long lecture every week, 13 weeks in a row. Most of the lectures were at least 3 hours long, and some of them 4 hours long. And during the 13 weeks, we went from set theory, topology, and measure theory to proving spectral theorem for unbounded operators and the Stone's theorem. So, like, you can imagine how much that was. And I was the only student there. And the lecturer was my master's thesis advisor. So there was like no crowd to get lost in. Like, any question was meant for me, and anytime I even looked out the window, he knew that I was looking outside the window and not paying attention to the lecture. So I had to make like really good sure that I understood all of the time everything and remembered everything, because there was only me, nobody else to ask. So every week I had to reread all of the notes, reread the textbook, do all of the exercises, and this was basically the only lecture when I did this. Like every other lecture, I just like read something or looked it up and then learned it before the test, and I was okay and I could have done other things. But this was the only lecture where I actually had to go through everything every week. And while going through all of the theorems, I was not just trying to read them, I was trying to prove them again. Sometimes on a paper, sometimes in my head. And I remember this feeling of failing miserably, because assuming that for unbounded operators, some things that I know from linear algebra would hold, such as that you can multiply operators or you can multiply operator with itself. So I sometimes failed miserably, but it also opened my eyes a little, because I realized that, well, you cannot trust things you knew before, because this is completely new circumstances, way more general, and we have to reprove everything from the beginning. So I had this feeling this year in Turku when we were talking about different forms of measurement compatibility. And we realized that some things that we take for granted in quantum theory do not hold in general probabilistic theories anymore. And to tell you more about our results, well, we have formulated these results in forms of three principles. Two of them are well known, one of them is new. The new one is the no free information principle. And we did this because like everybody likes to formulate their theorems or results in terms of principles and diagrams and circuits, because then you get to write more colorful papers. Mostly when your circuits are or images are colored, then you even get more colorful papers. So to present the principles that will constitute the result, the first one is no broadcasting. This is a very well-known principle, and basically says that you cannot, if you have a state, you cannot make two copies out of it. You might also know it as no cloning. There is a slight difference between broadcasting and cloning, but cloning is for extreme or pure states, and broadcasting is the general thing. And in terms of coffee, it just means that you cannot make two coffees out of one. The other principle is no information without disturbance. And this is another well-known principle, which states that you can't have the coffee for free, which in quantum theory means that whatever you measure, if the measurement is non-trivial, if it's not a measurement where you just toss a coin and record what you get from the coin, then you have to disturb the system. So you actually change the state and the output state is not the same, and you lose some information or you introduce some more noise. And in terms of coffee, it just says that you cannot have the coffee for free, you have to pay by disturbance. And the third principle is no free information, which is a little bit more complicated. And it just says that, okay, so we have a system and we are going to measure it. We know that we are going to introduce some disturbance, but is there some measurement, some information that we can get for free no matter what disturbance we introduce? In other words, if we pay for the lunch by causing some disturbance, can we get the coffee for free? So this is completely new principle, and sometimes it holds, sometimes it does not. In quantum theory, the case is that we get no broadcasting, no information without disturbance, and no free information, and that's well known. But what we did is that we actually looked into these principles in the formalism of general probabilistic theories, where we can construct different state spaces. And it turns out that these are three completely different things. So to state the result, we have the three principles: no broadcasting, no information without disturbance, and no free information. And what we what's like obvious is are these black implications that no free information implies no information without disturbance implies no broadcasting. And what we basically showed and elaborated upon are these red non-implications. In other words, no broadcasting does not imply no information without disturbance, and that does not imply no free information. Of course, the state spaces where no broadcasting does not hold and when we where we can broadcast, they were already known, and that was proved several years ago. But we also characterized the state spaces where no information without disturbance and no free information principle holds. So now to provide some kind of GPT refresher, because I don't know if everybody...
Can you clarify one of the implications you said, if you go back to the last slide, was obvious, is that no information without disturbance implies no broadcast. Is that because if you could make multiple copies, you could just do measurements on them all?
Yes.
Get as much information as you like that way?
Yeah.
Is that why it's obvious? The upward implication.
Yes, this one. Yeah. Exactly, yes. Yes, if you can make copies, then you can just measure on the copies.
Yes, I see.
Yeah.
I guess I haven't understood what the free information principle is. Can you stick what it is in quantum theory?
In quantum theory and in general GPT, we say that we have free information if there is a measurement that's compatible with every other measurement. So this is another formulation how to say this, because we can say no broadcasting as a formulation, as that the identity maps are not compatible with itself. The no free information, no information without disturbance is that measurement is not compatible with identity channel. And no free information is that measurement is compatible with any other measurement, except for the trivial measurement, for the coin toss, so, which is like P of EMs are only multiples of the identity.
Say that the middle one, you said it's that no measurement is compatible with the identity channel. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Oh. What does that mean?
So,
I mean, it doesn't have the effect of, it's not equal to the identity channel. I don't understand what it actually means. Can you just give its technical definition?
In quantum theory or in...
For example, yeah, say in quantum.
Okay, so in quantum theory, that would mean that there is no instrument for given P of EM such that the instrument would actually, the transformation carried out on the state would be identity channel.
Would be the identity.
Yeah.
So by compatibility, you mean it is the identity. It equals the identity.
So if a measurement would be compatible with identity channel, then the instrument would be...
Would do the identity.
Yes.
So I think the fact that you have disturbance means you're going non-identity channel.
Yes. I thought it, just compatibility, it sounded to me like it meant commuted or something like that, which I didn't.
Oh.
It's not that.
It's not. It's somewhat in that sense, but a little bit more general. It's in this operational sense. I'll get to it like very soon.
Okay, because it might commute with the identity channel. Since the identity channel does not, anyway, it doesn't matter. I understand what you have.
So a GPT refresher, and the notation I'll be using is that K is a state space, and a state space is usually a compact convex subset of a finite dimensional real vector space. And the compact convex can be somewhat operationally motivated. The subset of a finite real dimension, the finite dimensional real vector space is just to make the calculations simpler or possible in some senses. AK is the linear space of affine functions, where affine function is the one that preserves convex combinations. So it's something like a linear function. AK plus is the cone of positive affine functions, where positive means that the function is positive in every point of the state space. Now, EK is effect algebra, and this is actually the one that's important because these are the affine functions that map the state space to probabilities. So if we want to measure something, we want to map states to probabilities. And these are exactly the functions that do that. And AK star, that's the dual vector space to AK. And since we are finite dimensional, then the dual is what we imagine the dual being, and there's no trouble in having to specify which dual we mean. AK star plus is the positive cone of functionals, so it's functionals that are positive on positive functions. That's also called a dual cone. So now maybe to clarify a little bit, how does this look in quantum theory? Because I think that's where people get the idea. So the state space, that's the density matrices. That's the set of states we have. The affine functions on that, that's the traces multiplied by some self-adjoint operator. The cone of positive functions, that's just the cone of positive semi-definite matrices. Because we know that if for some matrix here and for all states here, this is positive, then the matrix must be positive semi-definite. The effects are just the matrices that have the spectrum between 0 and 1. So these are the elements of POVMs that we use for measurements. And also projectors are in here. The dual vector space is, again, self-adjoint operators. And AK star plus is the cone of, again, positive semi-definite matrices. Because the cones in quantum theory are somehow self-dual. There is some nice structure between them, but that does not have to hold in general. So at this point, I would like to ask if this is sufficient or if I should elaborate on this more, as I don't know how many people in here have already been exposed to GPTs or whether it's common knowledge or not.
Question about AK plus. Is it the cone of positive semi-definite matrices, or is it sort of the trace of an element of the cone with the operator?
Well, it's actually this thing, the function, but we can identify it with the matrix.
Okay.
So there's some kind of isomorphism that's usually like skipped over.
Yeah, finite dimensions in our products are uniquely identified with some matrix.
Sure, it just seemed like for AK you didn't skip over the isomorphism, and then for AK plus you did. I'm understanding right? Like they have elements of the same type.
Yes.
But you've written it in a sort of two different ways.
Yes. I mean,
but I think
that's what people usually do in quantum theory, I guess.
I think I follow.
So we're going to formulate everything in terms of some abstract, these kind of state spaces, and just to stay away from quantum theory. But the nice thing is that this will include quantum and classical theory at the same time, and also other theories with superselection or PR boxes or whatever we can imagine.
Let's see. When you say effect, do we think of that as some measurement that has a yes, a single yes, no out?
Yes.
It's not like, okay.
Or again, that
it couldn't have several outcomes. No, just yes, no.
Yeah, well, effect is, we can construct this measurement, and every yes-no measurement gives us one effect.
Yeah.
So there's again some kind of some sort of this like going from function to a matrix specifying the function. But yes, essentially, it just means yes or no measurement.
Yes.
So now the measurements are going to be affine maps from state space to probability distributions, where we take a sample space omega, and the sample space is going to be finite, and this is the set of measurement outcomes that we want to perform. And then we construct a set of probability measures on the sample space. And what we want to do is do an affine mapping from state space to probability distributions, because that's how we mostly describe measurements. And a little bit of notation that if A is a measurable subset of omega, then Mx is the actual probability measure assigned to the state x, and Mx semicolon A is the value of the measure on the subset A. So in quantum theory, this would be described by a tuple of effects by a POVM. And this is actually the same, because POVM is just giving us probabilities of separate outcomes, and this probability measure that corresponds to the same idea, just some probability over outcomes. So it's still the same formalism as in quantum theory.
Sorry, what is X here?
A state.
Sorry, it looks like you're trying to allow for infinite sample spaces.
Oh, no.
But why would you want them if you only have a finite dimensional?
No, we assume that the sample space is finite.
Oh.
Is it finite? Like that it has only finitely many points.
But then you say
points.
That A be a subset of omega, which is measurable. Isn't every subset measurable?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is. But I mean, we can
not
also
putting further restrictions on which ones are measurable or something.
No.
Okay.
Although I guess we can do that, but I don't see the point whether it would be interesting or not. So, to touch on compatibility of measurements. Now the idea is that, okay, we have measurements that describe how to assign probabilities to measurement outcomes. And we now want to ask whether we can do only one measurement or another measurement, or whether we can do some measurements at the same time. And this is an important question, because this is actually what started all of the thinking about quantum theory is strange, because think of the uncertainty principle. It just says that you cannot measure the position and momentum at the same time, well, in some very simple form. And this is just generalization of that same idea, whether we can perform two measurements at the same time or not. And what we want to say is that we can perform two measurements at the same time if there is another measurement, such that we can obtain the outcomes of the two measurements from this third bigger one. So having two measurements, M1 and M2, we say that they are compatible if there is this bigger measurement M, and we call it the joint measurement, which has a sample space of Cartesian product of sample spaces, such that for two subsets, A1 under omega 1 and A2 under omega 2, and for all states, these two equations hold. And the important thing to look at in these equations is that here we have omega 2, and here we have omega 1. What does that mean? That means that we are just summing over some of the outcomes over here, and we're just summing over some of different outcomes over here. So maybe an image would be more suitable. In terms of the outcomes, if this is a first sample space omega 1, and this is the second one omega 2, then this over here is their Cartesian product. And what I mean by summing is that we sum these outcomes, and it should give us this one, as in summing all of the probabilities together. And also summing these probabilities should give us this outcome.
Wait, why is there a gap?
Is it missing?
Why? Here? Because there's like a one sample space and the another.
Oh, those are the...
And this is the Cartesian product.
It's a square that represents.
Yes, yeah.
You should put lines here.
Yeah, they're red circles.
Which?
Like that red circle, the horizontal one.
Oh, okay.
It's the rightmost column because...
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
okay. So this idea of like summing rows and columns, that's exactly what we had here with this omega 2 being over here and omega 1 being over here. And that's also, has anybody over here worked with the compatibility of POVMs? So then you probably know that there's the condition that if we have two POVMs, EI and FJ, that they're compatible if there's this bigger POVM HIJ, such that we can get EI as sum over J from IJ and FJ as sum over I from HIJ, right? In other words, that we have two POVMs and they're compatible if there's a third with two indices such that if we sum over one or the other of the indices. So that's this, summing over one or the other of the indices. And that's compatibility of measurements. Yes. So now to actually explain the results, we have almost everything set in place. I'll just have to introduce some little bit more mathematical structure so I can actually tell you what has to be the structure of state space for this and that to hold. So the first thing I'll need is a direct convex hull. And then again, there's a question that has anybody before worked with category theory? So then you probably know that a Cartesian product is a product in categories. And this is going to be the coproduct in some category. So now what we are going to do is that we are going to take two state spaces and construct a third one from them. So we consider KA and KB to be some state spaces, and then their direct convex hull is a state space of ordered and weighted pairs. So that just means that it's a set of pairs, and there's a parameter lambda, which is from 0, 1, and there are two states. So it's nothing really special. And there's a thing that this, we actually know this from quantum theory, because we know this from super selection rules. Because actually in quantum theory, if we have super selection rules, that just means that our density matrices are block diagonal, and there are zeros of the diagonal, and here we have some convex combination of density matrices. So this is exactly that, just a little bit more general. And now, one more thing is that we can also what we can also show is that the effect algebra on this kind of structure that's just going to be a Cartesian product of the effect algebras. So it's just going to be a set of pairs of effects as described here. And now everything's ready for the first result. And that's about no information without disturbance. And this is actually not that hard to prove. And what we actually managed to prove and is that there exists some non-trivial observable that's compatible with the identity channel so that it does not disturb anything, if and only if the state space is of a form of some non-trivial direct convex hull sum. So if and only if we have this super selection structure. And actually this result was in some circumstances known before. The main idea of the proof is that when we just write down all of the conditions and like go through some algebra, then we get that the measurement there, it has to be constant somewhere. It has to be constant on these blocks, which just implies that the blocks must exist. Otherwise, it would just be all one block, and we would just get measurement that's constant everywhere, and that's the trivial measurement, because it just does not measure anything. And one interesting corollary is that, so let's assume that tau be a coin toss measurement, and that's what I also call trivial measurement. It's a measurement that always gives you the same probability distribution. It doesn't measure anything, it just tosses a coin and gives you whatever the coin toss gives. And what we can show is that M is a non-disturbing measurement compatible with identity if and only if the convex combination of M and coin toss measurement is non-disturbing. This means that if some really noisy measurement, because a convex combining measurement with a trivial measurement can be seen as adding more noise. And this basically shows that if there is some really, really noisy measurement that's non-disturbing, then there must be also some measurement that does not contain any noise, but it still is non-disturbing. Which basically means that noise does not help to make things non-disturbing. And basically the idea behind the proof is still about the thing that if something is constant, even though it's noisy, then it must be also constant even if we remove the noise. So this idea of being constant on the blocks, that's just all of the ideas that are used here.
What does being constant mean?
It just literally means that we have some blocks, and like for in every point of the block, it has to give the same probability distribution. So this is no information without disturbance, but this is also like implies that we can have information without disturbance in GPTs, because I mean we can just construct state spaces like this. And they don't even have to be classical.
Did you say you proved this in more generality than previous work?
It depends which.
Like I thought this is in Barrett.
I'm sorry?
I thought that this was proved by John Barrett.
I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe.
We can talk.
Probably. But I think that there was something about non-disturbing operations, but there were some citations that pointed to a paper which was not even about operations, so I just completely lost track. And there were some results about this mentioned somewhere, so probably some people already knew it. But I never found like this idea of noise does not helping. So some classification that we can obtain from all of this is that if we assume a two-dimensional state space, which means that it's a subset of a two-dimensional vector space, then the only measurement with non-disturbing, the only state space with non-disturbing measurements is a triangle, which is a classical state space with three possible states. And in three dimensions, we can show that the situation is little bit more general, because we can have these pyramid-shaped state spaces where we have just one point, and then we have something two-dimensional down here. And there still are non-disturbing measurements over here. Now, to move over to the no free information, I have to introduce yet another concept, because the actual result is formulated in terms of yet another concept. So,
before you go on, if you're just given some state space somehow, is there some test to tell whether it can have that form of, you know, that convex direct sum or whatever you called it?
No, not that I know of. So.
You mean like a physical test?
No, a mathematical test.
Well, no, not that I know of. I mean, if you find the decomposition into the blocks, then you know that it's that.
Yes, that's right.
But in other cases, I don't know if there is any condition for that. Except for these conditions that I just said for two and three dimensional state spaces. Because there it's like there's the number of dimensions is so few that we can actually count the dimensions and obtain like these two characterizations.
It has to be a cone or something like.
I'm sorry?
So in the three-dimensional case, it has to be a cone. But in general, there's no simple test or no simple way of saying what shapes are available.
No. So now what I have to introduce is the framework of simulating measurements with other measurements. So the idea is that if we have several measurement apparatuses, can we actually perform another measurement just by randomly selecting some of them, one of them, and then somehow post-processing the measurement outcomes? And this is called simulation of measurements or simulation of observables. It was, I think, introduced 2 years ago by Anthony Yassin and some collaborators, and since on some other people started working on it. So let's begin with two measurements. And we say that a classical map mapping probability distributions to probability distributions is a post-processing. If it's basically a map that we can just append after the measurement, and we get another measurement with a different sample space. So this is just concatenation of maps, post-processing. We basically measure something and then transform the outcomes. And what I have to mention is that post-processing rise to some kind of equivalence between measurements, because if we can post-process one measurement from another and then post-process back, then these measurements are in some sense equivalent in the case that if we measure one thing, then we can just obtain the other and vice versa. Second thing we can do with measurements is convex combination. And this is basically just convex combination of linear maps. So we just do a convex combination of the outcomes. And it just means that we are randomly selecting one of the measurements and performing that. So then what we can say is that measurement M is simulated by some set of measurements M1 to MK. If there is a set of post-processings, nu1 to nuk, and some numbers, lambda 1 to lambda k, which are some probabilities and they sum up to 1, such that M can be written as a convex combination of their post-processings. So this is just the simple idea that, yes, okay, so now if we want to do M, we just, using the probability distribution lambda, we just pick one of the MIs, and then post-process with the corresponding post-processing. And in multi-shot scenario, this just gives the correct probability distribution. And this is great because this can actually help us with no-free information. And one more thing that's really important and that probably has way more structure than sometimes it's obvious is that we have some kind of simulation irreducible measurements. And these measurements are such that if they are simulated by some set of measurements, then they are post-processing equivalent to one of those measurements. So if M would be simulation irreducible, then we know that only one of these lambdas is equal to 1. And this post-processing is actually just providing some equivalence between MI and this M. So simulation irreducible measurements. And one can also show that everything can be simulated using simulation irreducible measurements, and they somehow form the most important measurements that we can get because they correspond to, or in some sense, they correspond to projective measurements, give or take some properties. So now we can actually formulate the no-free information. And we can say that a measurement is compatible with every other measurement. In other words, it provides us with free information because if we are causing any disturbance, we can always measure the measurement. If and only if it is compatible with every simulation irreducible measurement. So this is really nice result because then we can actually characterize it, because we don't have to check infinitely many measurements. We just need to check the simulation irreducible ones. And the proof, or the idea is like this. So that if we, so this is something that happens on a pentagon state space. And there are three triangles drawn here. And these triangles, they correspond to some sets of measurements that can be simulated using some of simulation irreducible measurements. And what we get here in the middle is some kind of intersection. And all of these measurements, they are going to be compatible with every other measurement, because they are actually simulated by every simulation irreducible measurement, which means that they are compatible with every simulation irreducible measurement. And this is actually not that hard to prove, or now once everybody sees the idea, it's just like writing it down and using the formalism of compatibility and simulation reducibility. And the nice thing is that now noise helps. That now we can actually, in some cases, we can make measurements really noisy, and then they become compatible with everything in some theories. And this is what makes the difference between no free information and no information without disturbance, because no information without disturbance is like the geometric property of having blocks, and no free information, that's most of the time being noisy enough. So now I'll give you an example where I'll show that we can have in a non-trivial state space a measurement that's compatible with every other.
Somehow I forgot the definition of no free information. Did you give it? You gave it to us in this generalized probabilistic framework, this convex set framework?
Of the no free information?
Yeah.
So we say that a measurement M is free information if it's compatible with every other measurement. So whatever we measure, we can always measure M as well. So the state space that we are going to use is going to be this blue one. And there's also this extension drawn out to show that the basic idea behind constructing this state space is taking a simplex as this big triangle and cutting it off through here and just taking this one part. And now for to show the proof. So here in this picture, I don't know how well it actually can be seen, but that's schematics of the effect algebra corresponding to the state space.
So what are the axes? What are the axes from that state space, or is it just
it's
talking out some parameter?
It's this blue thing.
but what happens when you go this way or this way?
There's nothing.
I don't think the axes necessarily
have any meaning.
It's just
a display of context. It's just a compact convex set.
Okay. Yeah.
Anything in there is physical. It just has to have a 0, 0.
Yeah, it's, 0, 0, 0. Oh, you mean like these numbers?
Yes.
Oh, it's just to like somehow express some coordinates over there so we can actually like reference points and do something. At this state space, we can show that there are two simulation reducible measurements, a two outcome one and a three outcome one. The two outcome one, it has two outcomes given by two effects, and it's basically a measurement that measures the distance along the x axis. So if you are somewhere over here, you always get the second outcome, and if you are somewhere over here, you always get the first outcome. The second measurement, that's the one that comes from the simplex, and it measures the position within the triangle. So if you are over here, you always get this the third outcome. If you are at this point, you always get the second outcome. And if technically this would be a state, then that would provide the first outcome, but that's not a state because that's out of the state space. So one can show that these are exactly the two simulation reducible measurements. And the measurement compatible with all of with both of them is this one. And that's not really hard to show because if you consider this measurement and you add these two outcomes together, you get x and 1 minus x, exactly this measurement. Is that like obvious? So that just shows that this measurement can be post-processed from this one just by adding outcomes together. To show it from the second one, we have to introduce another measurement, M2 prime, which is the same as M2, but the first outcome was randomized between two outcomes. So this measurement is actually the same as this one. The only thing we did was instead of this delta one, we wrote something like 1/2 delta one plus delta one prime, or these two things. And it's obvious that from this measurement, we can post-process M2 just by adding these two things. And we can also post-process M by adding these two things, which again leads to the conclusion that these two measurements must be compatible. So this measurement is compatible with every other measurement on this state space. And hence, it provides us with free information. And this is actually somehow in a, or this was at least for me a little bit surprising result, because actually if you think about all of those, all of the convex structure and the cone generated by this state space at the same cone as the one generated by the square state space that gives us PR boxes. So this is this was actually quite fascinating to me when we got to there.
Why did you chop off part of the triangle to make it like less classical? Or I understand.
Oh, the idea
just of just to make this work, like it's kind
of where would the argument fail if you hadn't restricted the state space?
The argument is built on restricting the state space, because this measurement it actually measures alongside the x-axis, but it would give you certainty only in this outcome. So so that it follows that this measurement, it just doesn't know that the corner is chopped off. It just sees the triangle, and that's why it's compatible with this one that actually comes from the triangle. And it's compatible with the first one because they just measured the same thing, but this one is somehow more noisy.
So if you added that part back in, it would not be compatible.
Well, if you added this part in, this wouldn't be a measurement. Because I mean, in the point where x equals 1, this would give you a probability of minus 1. So with that,
in the case of the state space was, it was not possible to view the state space as a restriction of classical state space.
Okay. I'm sorry, come again.
Like here you restrict like from a simplex to like non-simplex, which is contained inside the simplex. Then you have this property. But the square state space where you talk about, like you were saying that the effect space is the same as a PR box.
Yes.
Right. There you would not have this containment.
No.
Yeah. So I'm just saying that does this property have to do with the fact that the state space is a restriction of the simplex?
Yes, exactly.
Is that sufficient or is also necessary for this property?
In this case, in the case of this state space versus the square, it's necessary. But in general, I'm not really sure. It's something like that, but in more dimensions, many things can happen. So it can be probably more and more complicated.
But why is the square not a restriction of the simplex?
Because
you just chop it.
Because if you have a
like in two dimensions,
square, And it would just continue here with these lines, they never meet. But once you just...
In the same dimension.
Once you tilt it, they just eventually meet somewhere.
You could just chop off the other line.
Yeah, why not just chop off the top?
Yeah, that... I mean, that would be the same. Like, if we would leave this here and just chop off the top...
Chop both off.
Yeah.
You get a square and it's restricted.
It depends on the size of the square, right? Like,
right.
Like a noisy square will be...
It has access to fewer states, like...
Yeah.
So you mean like this?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it doesn't access those states.
I think that should fail somewhere, but I can't see where. Oh yeah, I see. The thing is that it's important that this measurement goes alongside x-axis, and this measurement goes also alongside x-axis. Because one can show that this measurement is incompatible with the one same that goes along y-axis. And in this case, that would be the problem, because we would then have like measurements alongside different axes, and they would just be incompatible between each other.
I'm trying to remember what the intuition was for such a measurement being termed, like giving you free information. So you're saying it's compatible with any other measurement. So if you
yes.
know that you're going to do a measurement, you could always do this measurement as well without adding any extra disturbance. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
And there's also a sense in which you get more information from this measurement than having just applied the other measurement that you were planning to do?
Well, it depends. Like, if you're planning to do one of these two measurements, then also adding this one doesn't provide you any more information. But this just shows that if you would be doing, for example, the measurement alongside the y-axis, you can add also this one for free.
Right.
So it's free information because you can add it for free.
And in that case, it does provide more.
Yeah, in that case it does.
Right.
Because instead of measuring alongside y-axis, you would actually then measure this thing. So with that, I would like to say that this is not all of the results we have. This is not everything, because I have like skipped most of the proofs and most of the other stuff. And there's also like a lot of results on polygon state spaces, where the sets of measurements compatible with every other measurements are characterized in terms of noise and in terms of some other things, and it exactly boils down to pictures like this. So if I got you interested, there's more in there in the paper, and it's on archive, so it can be read. But with that, I would like to conclude the talk. And thanks for attention.
Any more questions for Martin?
So this is related to Ravi's question. I think you said earlier that you had some characterization of like what kinds of state spaces allow for measurements which give free information, or like you had a characterization of the state spaces which allow for free information. Do you have a similar characterization for the state spaces?
Well, we have some characterization for state spaces that do not allow. And there is characterization like, well, in terms of the compatibility with the simulation reducible measurements. But there is no clear geometric structure.
Can you say, is it relatively rare that they evolve for the information? Is that sort of the typical case or the atypical? I don't know what that I mean exactly. But you have to put some measure on the space.
I would say that somehow intuitively, given a random state space, there should be some free information.
There should be.
Yes, because I mean, if we think about what we need to do here with this square, we just need to have the lines parallel so they never intersect, and that's one special case of. But there's many other where they are not parallel. So
if we deform the square a little bit, so
yeah,
it's only in two dimensions.
Yes. But then again, I mean, that holds for polytopes, and I think that most of the, like definitely most of the state spaces are not polytopes, so it's really, so at that point it's hard to tell.
And you say spheres never allow, balls never allow for information, or do, or some fill.
I mean, and well, at that point, it just really depends on what we select as random state space.
No, I said it's a spherical state space.
Oh, for every measurement, we can find some other incompatible with it. So there we don't get the free information. So that in that case, we don't have it.
What's the important aspect of? Like the sphere is like maybe infinitely many extreme points, or like once you have some curve, then this doesn't work, or something else going on?
Well, I would say that the important aspect is that, as in case with quantum theory, there are that the simulation irreducible measurements, they are basically the projective measurements, and there are two outcomes. And if you have only two outcomes, then you are trying to intersect. Something like 2D planes, and they only intersect in a line, and that's the line of trivial measurements. In other words, like the simulation irreducible measurements don't have enough outcomes for the intersection in the middle to be somehow contain something. It's like this intersection would actually be a point, so that would just be the known result of coin toss being compatible with everything. But if they have more outcomes, then the intersection is something non-trivial.
So it seems like the interesting GPTs concerning this stuff is like a polytope, like finitely many extreme points.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, because that's going to have a lot of outcomes for the simulation irreducible measurements, I guess.
Right. Quantum theory has flat surfaces and also curved, like on the state space, there's curved parts to the state space and flat parts. Could that kind of shape also have this sort of property?
As in the higher dimensions?
Yeah, in some.
Well, yes, but as far as I'm aware, that should not help. That actually, yes, it would seem as that there might be some potential, but it all works out in such a way that the intersection always ends up only in the one point. That they somehow like exactly avoid each other.
What are the flat parts you're thinking of?
Like the four dimensional.
Yeah, like
three dimensional space.
You have three dimensional.
Anything above Q?
You have trit, Q-trit. Mm-hmm. Then say mixtures of zero state and the one state. On a flat.
Oh, okay. So anything that's not full rank, kind of.
As if anything is not full rank, it's on the surface.
Yeah, maybe there's some way to create an interesting GPT out of chopping up quantum states enough. You chop off all the full rank things to start with.
Yeah, maybe.
No, that's not convex.
I don't like really understand those state spaces very well. Just understand them in sections.
I don't know what I understand.
I just mean like geometry.
Yeah.
do you have any sort of extra, I mean, it sounds like a good principle, but do you have any more reasons to think that no free information is a good principle, like any additional intuition?
It's a good
principle. Well, I'm thinking, say, if you're trying to reconstruct quantum theory and you want a set of principles, that might be a good one to choose.
Well, I don't think, I don't know if there's some justification for it, I guess. No, not that I can think of.
And the opposite extreme from classical.
Yes.
Classical, everything is compatible with everything. Nothing is compatible with
any other questions?
Well, Lucien's question is, raises another. Have people thought of principles for narrowing down the convex sets that you allow? I mean, if people propose different things, is there some interesting thing in between all convex sets and quantum mechanics, let's say?
Like some principles that.
Like here, you could say no free whatever, no free information.
I guess that actually depends on what we call like some good principle. Because, for example, if the state space and the cone of effects, if they're like weakly self-dual, that gives us a lot of structure. But it's also hard to justify a principle that would say that there is some duality between preparations and measurements, because I don't know how one would justify that. And there's like many other things that we can like come up with along these lines.
That has been studied, sort of what are the people sort of classified all the self-dual state spaces?
I don't think so. That's going to be a huge class.
One that's not quantum.
I'm sorry?
Well, this is just, we have some time, so I'm just asking. Maybe we don't. But what's a good example of a state space that's not quantum mechanical, but it is self-dual?
The square state space.
Squares.
And I think every even-sided polygon should be.
Regular polygon.
Yes, but I'm not really sure about that one.
You have this series of implications at the beginning of your talk. Do you think of anything that might be above that even? Or is that just
straight from the statement? We tried to think about some other thing that would be even below no free information, but everything we came up with just turned out to be the equivalent to saying that the measurement is trivial.
That is below.
Yeah, that's below.
It seems like there should be some generalization of this no free. I mean, that's saying there's one measurement that has this special property. I don't know how to generalize it, but you might say some pairs of measurements that have some special, at least one of them is compatible with every other. I don't know if it leads to anything interesting. But
I don't know.
It seems like it wants to be generalized in some way.
At this point, there is a research where people were using these hypergraphs of compatibility, and they were basically like saying like, okay, we have this set of measurements, and this three are compatible together, and like this two, and like,
yeah.
I think it becomes that.
I see.
I might be harder to justify as a physical principle.
Yeah, at that point, I think that it's just not a research about principles.
So this is only about single systems, right? So you could maybe generalize by saying if you append a system, I think we chatted about this, like if you append a system to it, can you get some information by like, you know, joint measurements, things like that, like canons, you know, can you do things with MCDs, for instance? It's only about measurements of a single system.
Yes, I mean, something like transforming this into some local tomography property.
Or something which takes into account kind of composition. Can you, if you compose, get some free information? I'm not sure.
I don't know. It will first of all depend on what kind of tensor product will be selected, but after that, if we have local tomography, we probably don't get anything extra.
Okay, there's no more questions. Let's thank Martin again for a nice talk.
Thanks.